Welcome back to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you by the California 1020, 10 miles, 20 bands, cal1020.com, coming up on Sunday, February 15th, Del Mar Fairgrounds to Encinitas and back, and also by Core Sports, the best in women's athletic wear. That's coresports.com, and you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville Radio on iTunes. Our next guest, Lisa Mallett, is the president and co-founder of Wear Blue, Run to Remember, and an Ironman World Championship finisher. Lisa, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, thanks so much for taking time. So take me back, growing up. Where'd you grow up?
I'm from outside of San Francisco in a suburb in the Bay Area.
And were you athletic growing up?
Yes. I mean, I was never an amazing athlete. I played soccer in the fall, track in the spring, and that was kind of the routine. A little bit of cheerleading that I try to keep under wraps and just kept at it through high school.
And so out of high school, where did you end up going to college?
I went to UC Santa Barbara.
Ah, Gaucho.
Right. Latin American cowboy. There's a lot of good times had there. And I didn't do any collegiate sports in college, but I was definitely always running to manage the chaos of college life, and I lived with a house full of cross-country runners. They definitely kept me on my toes.
Now, were you from a military family?
No, the opposite of a military family. Very just California liberal growing up, and actually very little exposure to the military.
So when did you meet John?
I actually met John when I was in kindergarten. Poor man's known me since I was 5 years old, which made for a very awkward period of exposure. But he and I both went to a small Catholic elementary school in our hometown, and we were always friends and interacted in elementary school, but it wasn't until high school when we became really good friends.
So did you guys date through high school and college and basically forever?
No, I dated all of his friends.
Did you really? That's great.
We ran with a tight circle of really great people. And when we were in high school with our church, we went to Mexico over spring break and built homes in Tijuana for families in need.
Yep.
And I remember it was my freshman year and John's, junior year. And we were buddies, we were partners, and we had to build all these frames of this house. We just cranked out all these frames, and I finished that trip, and I went home, and I think I told my mom, I said, John Hallett, I'm going to marry him and have his redheaded babies.
Is that right? You told your mom that?
I don't think that John was as effusive or aware of his love for me at that point, but... You know, some things take time.
Now,
and
then
John, go ahead.
I was going to say, at that point, was he talking military?
It wasn't until John's senior year when he was really trying to decide where to go to college that he chose the military path in an effort to find a university or an institution that he could challenge himself intellectually, physically, and interpersonally. And I think the military really was that route where he would find that success.
So when did you guys get married?
Well, let's see. We started dating in college when John's senior year at West Point, and then we were married in December of 2003. John was stationed out of Hawaii, and he headed to Kirkuk, Iraq with his unit.
Yeah.
3 weeks after we were married.
Oh, my God. So how scary is that as a wife of a soldier who's going into, line of fire?
I think it was pretty naive in those early years. I think there's something romantic in the classic sense about a deployment. I mean, my husband's going to war, and I'm home on the home front. And John, I was fortunate, though, in those years in that John was going to Kirkuk at a time when it was relatively stable.
Right.
And I wasn't too overly concerned about his safety, and that you really can't go to that place or you'll be just a wreck the entire deployment. You have to really compartmentalize. Those pieces, and there's the sadness of missing my new husband. There's the fear of his safety. There's managing life in what's become a two-person world. You just got to keep them separate and really focus on the day-to-day. and the times that we do get to connect via email or a phone call.
Did he consider being in the military? Was that something that he planned to do for just a period of time and then go, okay, then I'm going to move on? Or was this, did you see this as basically John was going to be there forever? He was going to be a lifer?
John said he was not committed to being a lifer, and that as long as we were enjoying the ride, we would stay in.
Yeah.
But I felt John had the drive and the passion for soldiers that he was meant to be a lifer.
Right.
I remember sitting on the beach in Hawaii after he came back from the deployment, and we made a list of pros and cons. Do we stay in or do we get out? And our pros won, and we decided we wanted to continue the adventure and traveling the world and really serving our country. It was something that we as a couple believed in, our country and our opportunity to serve our country.
Did that change much when you became parents? Was with the, in terms of your concern for John, you know, being overseas as a mom?
To be honest, I still kept it very separate.
Yeah.
And that those things don't happen to our family. Bad things don't happen to us.
Right.
Those are other people that they happen to.
Yeah.
So there was never that fear that that would be a path that our family would have to walk.
Gotcha. And then, you know, when you end up going to Afghanistan was, you know, that was a really brutal place when we're talking, you know, 2009. I'm sure at that point things are a little scarier.
In my head before John left,
yeah,
I thought the hardest part of his deployment would be to have our baby without him. I was 9 months pregnant when John left, so I knew I was going to have this baby by myself. And I thought, okay, that's it. That's our military duty. This is that we're going to get through it, and it's going to be fine. But as soon as John's unit became embedded in southern Afghanistan and the first couple of weeks tumbled by, that's when we all began to realize the real dangers that were present in southern Afghanistan at that point.
And
go ahead.
I was going to say, so John was coming, he was coming back from a goodwill mission in August of 2009 when John was one of four soldiers killed in Afghanistan. I can't imagine as a mother of three and with your soulmate how difficult that was to, when the news comes, it's hard to believe.
Well, it's Heidi, our youngest child, was born August 2nd. And then I remember 4 days later, it was the last time I talked to John. It was a quick call, and I remember him saying, I'm feeding the baby, trying to keep her quiet. And he's like, I've never heard her cry. And I said, oh, don't worry about it. You have a lifetime for that.
Yeah, wow. Ugh.
Last words. I mean, last words. So, and then
so you didn't talk to her for another...
A week later, we lost our first soldiers in the unit, and it was terrifying. It was a holy smokes moment.
Yeah.
This is real.
Right.
But our communication was pretty sparse at the point. Telephone lines, data lines weren't up for communication back to families. So we had this three-week chunk between that last phone call with John and then the day we got the fateful news.
You know, that August 25th, 2009 is when you find out that John was one of four soldiers killed over there. As a, you know, how old were your children at that point? Well, one was newborn, but the other two were how old?
Jackson was 3 years old. Bryce was 1 year old, weeks away from his second birthday. And Heidi was 3 weeks old.
Wow, so they're so young. And you go from being, so now you're a single mom. And how did that, your whole world is changed.
It was rocked.
Yeah.
It was just rocked. I remember a week before John died thinking to myself, oh my gosh, this is hard. You know, you got a kid in the bathtub, you've got another kid crying, you've got a newborn baby that needs a diaper change. I was like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this?
Yeah.
And then I took a deep breath and I said, it's just a year. John's just gone for a year. He'll come home. It's supposed to be hard right now, but we're going to get through it. But that year became a lifetime for us.
Right.
And it was a huge transition to accept and understand my new place in the world. And I remember those first few days, I felt like a displaced people. I was a wife, but my husband was dead. I was a military spouse, but we were no longer in the military. I was a married woman with three kids, and yet I was no longer married. I couldn't wrap my head around the enormity, the complexity of the situation, and then keep up with the day-to-day demands of having three very young children.
Well, and you have to be strong for them. It's not like you don't have the ability to just sort of disappear for a while and grieve.
Absolutely not. And I remember this first day, it's just grief, and I remember crying in the car and Jackson saying, "Mommy, don't cry." It was so scary for them.
Yeah.
And that little three-year-old voice, you know, scared and sad and asking Mommy not to cry was such a snap, because it was a reminder that they had already made a sacrifice. They had already lost their father. It wasn't fair for them to have to lose a second parent to grief.
So,
and it was this realization and this reminder that there is a very real and present life that demanded to be lived.
So at that point, knowing you have to be strong for your children, did that just change everything in terms of, okay, you know, I have a role here besides being the grieving widow? I have to basically on my own raise these three children. And is the military, are they equipped to help in that type of situation?
The military family is fierce, and they take care of their own. And I had an amazing community of women who stood at my side and really supported me through the process, caring for my children, bringing me meals, and ultimately standing at my side and forging the path of our nonprofit, Wear Blue, Run to Remember, together.
Talk a little bit about that. Obviously, from your experience, Wear Blue, Run to Remember, it makes perfect sense. It's like we have to not forget the people who put themselves in harm's way for the way we live in this country. Talk a little bit about the creation of this when you co-founded the foundation, and how did it start?
So Wear Blue, Run to Remember builds running communities that honor the service and sacrifice of the American military.
Yeah.
And in 2009-2010, our unit, 5th Stryker Brigade, deployed to southern Afghanistan and lost 41 soldiers.
Oh, my God. 41?
We had a community on the home soil that was just reeling from these losses.
Yeah.
And looking for a way to support one another, to survive the anxiety and stress and fears of these deployments, and to honor and remember these men who were a part of our military family. And so Erin O'Connor, a fellow military wife and an avid runner, really stood up in our unit and said, "Hey, we need to gather, we need to connect, we need to make something happen." And as a runner, she pulled us together, and every Saturday we began to run. And the first time we ran around the airfield on post. And then the next week we paused and we called out the names of the service members who had been killed so far in that year.
Mm.
And every week more and more men and women began to join this community as we ran through hardships of military life specific to that deployment and found a way to put motion and meaning into our steps. And when the unit returned that year from their deployment, we recognized that there was a need in them, too, to honor and remember their service members. And even though the deployment was over, military life is challenging. Frequent moves, frequent deployments. We needed a healthy, life-affirming support network that gave access to these men and women to connect in meaningful ways. And so every Saturday, our community began to grow. Wear Blue has chapters and communities across the country that gather every Saturday morning with their blue shirts on.
Yeah.
They take a moment, call the names of the service members who've been killed that weekend in the global war on terror, as well as the names who've been killed personal to them. And they push off on a run, something life-affirming.
So were you amazed at how this grew from, you know, from really you guys just doing it on one base to people around the country getting involved?
It's incredible to see the way that Wear Blue has grown. And for me, it's been amazing to be inspired by the stories that emerge out of the community. Teresa Maggart's husband was killed in 2010, and she couldn't run a 5K when he was killed. And now, a few years later, she's running her first marathon and is so strong and confident in her steps for Brandon. And the men and women actively serving, staying connected to their families, running through deployments, running in honor of their battle buddies who made the ultimate sacrifice. It's been so cool to find strength from these men and women who choose to endure, choose to heal, and choose to honor in really positive, life-affirming ways.
So running becomes medicine. Running becomes therapeutic. It's something that these folks, the wives and the family members, lean on to help them get through these tough times.
Absolutely. It's a way for them to not only get through a difficult time, but to really find a way to thrive, to not live in the moment of loss, but to be inspired by the life that was lived, and to take a chance to celebrate through our footsteps these men and women, to connect over our similarities of shared military experiences, and to be reminded in the steps of life, how precious life is.
So through this, is this when you ran your first marathon?
I ran my first marathon back at UC Santa Barbara. John went to Ranger School.
Yep.
And I said, I'm going to do something tough too, although a marathon is nowhere near as challenging as Ranger School.
Right.
But I was diligent in my training and slow as can be, and I finished my first marathon, and I got a taste of running and endurance sports, and I was hungry for more.
And now your marathon PR, 351?
353.
Oh, 353. Well, next
353.
One.
But it will get faster.
Love that. Now, are your children, do they, when you guys go out running, what do you guys do with the kids?
I rely a lot on childcare.
Aha.
It's necessary. My kids were 3, 1, and 3
Oh,
weeks,
my God, yes.
And I really needed to find the space for myself.
Yes.
So that I could be a strong and confident woman, so I could be a strong and confident mother.
Exactly.
And so I use my childcare time to get out and be healthy so that when I'm with my kids, I'm on and ready to be the best mom possible.
So you've also just recently completed the Ironman World Championship, and I think, was that your third Ironman?
It was my third Ironman. I did Ironman Canada last year on the 4-year anniversary of John's death. And that was my first taste of the sport. And then this year I did Ironman Coeur d'Alene in June. And then,
the World
amazingly, I was given the opportunity to the Ironman World Championships in Kona just last weekend.
And what was that experience like? Canada's wonderful. Coeur d'Alene is wonderful. But there's something pretty spiritual about being on the big island of Hawaii.
Oh, that's the word. There is just power in those islands. And the pulse of all the athletes there gathered to just all of our hearts pumping for 140.6 miles together is unreal. It was intimidating. I've never seen so many fit people in my life in one place.
Yeah.
And it was powerful. It really pushes me and inspires me to want to be more and to be a better athlete, to witness how these men and women stay focused on their training and their diet and push themselves in an event to really see who they can be and what they can achieve. It makes me want to get out, do more, be more.
And I know that you're part of the NBC show that's going to air on the 15th of November. And, you know, from other, my buddy Dave McGilvery was out there, covered by NBC as well, and he's going, boy, you know, cameras are with you all the time. How hard was that to deal with?
Well, I don't think the cameras caught anything very exciting with me moving slowly as I was. It's very nerve-wracking to be on camera. It's not a comfort zone for me. Absolutely not. I put on my helmet all wrong, and it's dorky for 7.5 hours of bike riding. The classic Lisa Hallett move. But I hope that it is a chance for our story to be shared.
Exactly.
And I know that every time I give myself the space and opportunity to share John's story and our journey, it's a little more of a piece of admitting that John died and he doesn't get to come home to our family. And that despite that huge heartbreak, we're going to be okay. We're going to move forward. But admitting it is such an important step. It makes it a little more real, but it also makes moving forward a little more real.
Your children are so young. How do you introduce them to your husband, to what John represented and how special he was?
They are starving for daddy stories, and every night, okay, mommy, tell me daddy story, tell me daddy story. And I love it, usually. Sometimes I run out of the stories, which is really sad in itself to say I've come to a point where my stories, your daddy, are used up, are gone, because we didn't have the amount of time that we wanted to have together.
Right.
But we also have a really beautiful relationship with John's family, who is our family, and all of John's friends, who have been so fantastic about standing up and telling us their stories.
Right.
And it's just so great as the boys and Heidi get older and they become students and athletes for them to get this chance to hear John's stories of being a little boy and growing up. And they can connect and identify with that.
So I hear there's a John L. Hallett ultra marathon. True?
Well, in the past, in 2011 and yep. 2012, we worked with the
San Francisco
Harley-Davidson, and they supported us. And we started at midnight, a group of five or six runners.
Yeah.
We started at midnight at the Golden Gate National Cemetery, and we ran a marathon holding the American flag through the streets of San Francisco. We ran 26.2 miles past the beach and through
yeah.
the city to the starting line of the San Francisco Marathon, where we gathered with other Wear Blue runners, running in honor of fallen service members personal to them and just supportive community members. And then we pushed off and did another 26.2 miles.
Oh, my God. Wow. For folks out there who want to support what you're doing great work, Wear Blue, Run to Remember, how can they find out about maybe a chapter near them or donate to your foundation?
Great place to go is to the website, which is wearbluerunToRemember.org, and they can find a community in their area with whom they can start running. They can find out ways to get a Wear Blue shirt so that when they step out their front door, lace up their sneakers, they can make their steps purposeful. It's a part of a larger movement. Or they can find ways to support the organization financially.
Love that. Lisa, thank you so much for taking so much time. And do you have now that you recovered from Ironman a little bit, now did you have the kids over there?
Yes, that was the best part of the race, was crossing that finish line and just crushing the kids in my arms. I loved it.
That's the coolest thing. And
yeah,
they got to be in Hawaii. I'm sure they like Coeur d'Alene and they like Canada, but being in Hawaii is a little different.
Yes. Beach always wins, especially when you live in rainy Washington.
Oh, that's right. You're up in Washington. So what is next? Do you have another event on the horizon?
I need to do another Ironman and wear my helmet properly. And
now, was your helmet backwards, or you said your straps all goofy?
It was pretty high, pretty high.
Oh.
I not have pushed it down all the way. Lessons learned. that's the cool thing about triathlon. I mean, there's so many different facets to be considering and to learn and to grow, and I am just ready to keep learning how to be a triathlete and to make the crossover from being a participant in these events into being an athlete in these events.
Well,
an athlete doesn't mean winning, but getting out there and kind of putting it all on the line every time.
Well, first of all, the camera guys could have said something like, hey, Lisa, helmet's a little geeky. Why don't you shove that puppy down? That would have been, you know, a little something for the effort. It's sort of like having food on your face and then not saying anything. It's like, come on, guys, say a little help me out here. And coming down a Lee Drive, knowing that you'd finished it. This was a tough year. I've been there since 1980. And from athletes I talked to, because of the wind, this was one of the tougher years. And people always say, oh, God, it was hot and windy. It's always hot and windy. You're in Hawaii. But this was windier, people getting blown off their bikes, that type of thing. To finish on a year like that, you have to be very proud.
Well, I wouldn't want to do it the windy years.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a great point. If you're going to do the Iron Man, you want to do the, not the Iron Wimp, you want to do the Iron Man.
That's right. That's right.
Love
it. Man. To finish that race, the adrenaline of the finish line, it was just engulfing. I am proud of my finish, but even more so, I'm proud of my journey to that finish.
Well, and you're changing lives. What you've learned through what you went through is helping so many others where they're empowering themselves through running and now through triathlon too. I love that.
Well, we'll see. I am very grateful. I'm so fortunate to get to be a part of the Wear Blue team and just the community who takes such purposeful steps every week.
Lisa, thank you so much for taking so much time to chat, and we will see you on November 15th on the Ironman NBC show with your helmet all geeked out. But you know what? It doesn't matter how geeky you are. You're an Ironman. That's always cool.
Thanks, Bob. I really appreciate it.
Again, we are brought to you by California 1020, 10 miles, 20 bands, cal1020.com. Coming up on Sunday, February 15th, Del Mar Fairgrounds, Encinitas, and back. Core Sports, the best in women's athletic wear. And you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes at Babbittville Radio. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.